February 4th, 1919. At the present moment, when it falls to me to give public lectures on the social question here in Zurich, it is perhaps not inappropriate for us on this study group evening to look at the deeper aspect of the social question and work at the significant enigma it has become today. We know, of course, that within the outer aspect of a human being, seen from the point of view of our bodily faculties of perception, we must recognize the real person in the inner depths. We first become aware of this inner being when we appreciate that it is fundamentally connected with everything of which we can say is the very heart and core of the world for our knowledge, for our whole life. You have to remember that it is particularly with regard to our conception of the human being that our anthroposophical worldview is so different from the ordinary worldview. Look at my endeavor to present an outline of the anthroposophical world conception. Everything that you have, in fact, read in my occult science, outline of esoteric science, and you will see that the evolution of our earth is regarded not only in relation to the human being, but as having come from earlier incarnations of our earth planet. Our earth evolution emerged from the ancient moon evolution, and this from the ancient sun evolution, and this ancient sun evolution out of and from the old Saturn evolution. However, if you look at all that has been introduced to show the stages this planetary evolution has passed through to become Earth evolution, you will be able to confirm that wherever you look, the human being is there. Humanity is present throughout the whole process. The entire cosmos is regarded in such a way that we see all its forces and all its happenings focused on the human world. The human being is the center of the conception of the world. In a conversation between Capesius and the initiate in one of my mystery plays, I introduced this central focus of the whole of our anthroposophical world conception, especially with regard to the effect it has on the aspiring human soul. I wanted to show what an impression it must make on anyone to realize that all the generations of the gods, all the forces of the universe, are actually engaged in working at the goal of ultimately producing humankind and placing it at the center of its creation. Precisely because this conception is so true, I pointed out how very necessary it is to emphasize the need for human modesty and to tell ourselves over and over again that if we could consciously experience our whole being inwardly in its relation to the world around us and bring this, our whole being, to actual manifestation, it would be a microcosmic image of the whole of the remaining world. But how much do we know or experience or manifest in action all that we are as human beings in the highest sense of the word? So whenever we clearly picture to ourselves the idea of what we are as human beings, we always waver between arrogance and modesty. We must certainly not surrender to pride, but neither must we become engulfed in modesty. We would be doing just that if we were not to estimate in the highest possible terms the task we human beings have been given through our very position in the universe. Fundamentally speaking, we can never think highly enough of what we ought to be. We can never fully appreciate the deep cosmic dimension of the feeling we should have for our responsibility when we look at the way the whole universe is oriented towards us, human beings. Coming as it does from anthroposophically based spiritual science, this should, of course, not be so much mere theoretical knowledge as a feeling of holy awe for what we as human beings ought to be, and yet only in the rarest cases manage to be. In fact, we ought often to have the feeling when we encounter an individual human being, there you stand. You bring certain things to expression in this present incarnation. But you pass from one life to another, from one incarnation to another, and this gradual process of development bears the imprint of eternity. We could extend and deepen these feelings in many other directions. It is solely by means of this feeling that spiritual science can bring us to a proper appraisal of what a human being is, to a feeling for human dignity in the context of the world. This feeling can fill our whole soul, and only if it extends to every part of our inner being can it put us in the proper mood to sort out, if need be, our individual relationship to another person. We can regard this as one of the first substantial achievements of modern anthroposophically based spiritual science, a proper respect for the human element in the world. This is one thing. There is another thing, too, that we shall arrive at out of an involvement with an anthroposophically based spiritual science that is not merely theoretical, but really heartfelt and profound. And it is this. If we contemplate everything that is active in the world in the way of the elements in earth, water, and air, everything that shines down to us from the stars and breathes in the wind, everything that speaks to us from the various kingdoms of nature, if we contemplate all this in the light of anthroposophically based spiritual science, we find that in one way or another it is connected with the human being. Everything takes on value for us because we can bring it into a certain relation to the human being. Supersensible knowledge leads us to have a feeling relationship between the human being and everything else in the world. The poet Christian Morgenstern put into beautiful verse a feeling I have often spoken about to our friends in connection with a chapter of St. John's Gospel. The feeling which comes over us when we think about the different ranks in the kingdoms of nature. We can imagine the plant looking at the lifeless realm of the mineral, and in doing so, becoming aware that in the order of natural beings, they are actually on a higher level than the lifeless mineral realm. However, as the plants look on the mineral realm as the ground out of which they grow, they can come to realize that although they are at a higher stage of being, they nevertheless grow out of the soil of the earth and owe to it their very existence. Therefore, the plant says, I bow in gratitude to what is lower than myself. We ought to have similar feelings about the animals and their attitude to the plants. And again, in the human kingdom, when in the course of their evolution human beings have reached a higher stage, they must look down with respect and awe to what is in a certain way lower than they. Not merely formulating all this intellectually, but so that the weaving pulse of life in all things becomes a real cosmic experience of the soul. This is what the true being of anthroposophical spiritual science can bring us to feel. It enables us to attain a living relationship between ourselves as human beings and the whole of the rest of the world. There is also a third thing. Spiritual science does not talk endlessly in a pantheistic way about spirit underlying everything. In fact, spiritual science does not only talk about real spirit, but aims to speak out of this reality of the spirit, out of the very substance of spirit itself. It strives to speak in such a way that everyone for whom spiritual science is a living experience knows that whenever he thinks thoughts of spirit, the spirit itself is present in these thoughts. Anyone who is inspired by the spirit of spiritual science, if I may put it like this, does not want merely to utter thoughts about the spirit, but to make way for the spirit itself to speak through his thoughts. Spiritual science is a means to finding the direct presence of the spirit, the active power of the spirit. Look now at the wealth the soul acquires through a living involvement with spiritual science, and compare this with the social demands of which I spoke yesterday. The social demands which live in the consciousness of today's working class. You should realize that the kind of thoughts which form the basis for this consciousness are ideology, a mere web of abstract thoughts. In fact, it is considered to be the essential characteristic of all soul and spirit experience that it is merely ideology, and that all that is real are the economic processes. Human beings are immersed in these. They comprise their struggle for existence. And everything human beings think about and know, all their manifestations of artistic creativity, social behavior, morals, laws, arise from these economic processes, like a kind of mist or fog. Everything appertaining to inner life is only an ideological shadow. Compare the inner life of mind that is regarded as unreal shadow images with the kind of spiritual activity that is waiting to enter our life of soul from the direction of anthroposophical spiritual science. The aim of this kind of spiritual science is that the human soul shall assist the spirit itself to become a living reality in the world. This living spirit has been driven out of the kind of contemporary outlook which originated with the middle class and has been taken over to their detriment by the working class. It has been driven out. And what ought to live in human beings as an awareness of the living truth, the spirit is in me, now exists merely as ideology. Secondly, if one relies on one's ordinary bodily senses, how much does one actually see of the qualities of real humanity, for the full understanding of which we need to invoke not only Earth evolution, but ancient Moon, Sun, and Saturn evolution as well? Modern consciousness has no room for the essential human being, which, once we have acquired an awareness of it through anthroposophical spiritual science, opens the way for us to have a real feeling for human dignity and value, so that we can relate properly as human individuals to other human individuals. Is it conceivable that in the chaos of today's social life, people will find a proper relationship to one another, which is essential for any real solution to the social enigma? How can such a just relationship emerge unless it rests on an evaluation of the human being in cosmic terms, which can only arise from spiritual knowledge and spiritual perception? Thirdly, regarding a relation to outer law, people must not turn to abstract conceptions of the kind economists and sociologists deal in today, but look for direct personal contact with the actual facts and events in the surrounding world. With regard to things appertaining to the human environment, it is essential we learn to relate to this world. This third point recalls what I have already said, that in our time, anthroposophical, spiritual science becomes a real soul experience, a feeling for all the creatures and beings outside ourselves, for all that is below us and above us, in the hierarchical order of nature and the world of the gods. So now look at two different things. Look on the one hand at the consciousness of the working class and how far removed it is in the way of real experience from a feeling for the living spirit itself and its activity in human beings. How it has reduced all spiritual life to an ideology. Think how far removed is the way a working class person thinks, and which is even more important, feels about his peers and embodies in his general outlook from a thoroughly radical evolution, from a thoroughly radical evaluation of the human being that reaches through to the spirit. And finally, consider how far removed are the almost universal standards of judgment today, with everything being estimated in economic terms, from the kind of appreciation we acquire for things beyond ourselves when we learn to perceive all that may be drawn from spiritual science regarding the relation of human beings to those other realms of existence. Look at a further contrast. Look at what humankind has come to as a result of the appalling extent to which the materialistic nature of the last few centuries has invaded human souls. On the other hand, think of the hopes that can be stirred to life because real spiritual science is available to humankind. Put these two facts side by side and ask yourselves whether a true grasp of the social enigma will not depend on human souls being stirred to the core by what spiritual science has to give. If you have a proper feeling for these two prospects, the hopeless and the hopeful, then anthroposophical activity will become for you what it indeed should become for humankind today, a necessity of life, an essential part of everything we do. You will tell yourselves that in the whole context of humanity's recent development, nothing is more obvious to you than that this social problem should rear its head. But you will also realize that nothing is more obvious than that this social problem makes people helpless to a tragic extent. For at this very time, when the social problem is knocking so loudly and clearly at the threshold of our worldview and of our life, human beings are at the same time going through one of their hardest ordeals, the ordeal of having to find their way to the spirit through their own inner resources. There will be no revelations for us today unless we go in search of them out of our own freedom. For since the middle of the 15th century, we have been living in the age of the consciousness soul, in which everything has to have the light of consciousness shed on it. Is it not a common complaint today to say, a terrible catastrophe has overtaken humankind? Why have the gods allowed us to suffer such an appalling disaster? Why did the gods not spare us this? For it is a deplorable situation that human beings have got themselves into. Despite this feeling, do not let us forget that we are living in the age when we have to manifest our inner human freedom, an age in which the gods, in accordance with their primal purpose, will not manifest themselves unless human beings turn towards them and out of free resolve take them into their innermost soul. With regard to the most important things in human evolution, we have reached a turning point today, and this includes Christianity. Some people nowadays, particularly those who are actively engaged with the social question, have pointed to the fact that we willingly accept Christianity, but only that part of it which harmonizes with our own social ideals. But this most important of all impulses, the impulse which gives everything else on earth its proper meaning, cannot be dealt with in this manner. We must realize that the amount of Christianity that has come to expression among humankind so far is actually only a beginning. It amounts to little more than an acknowledgement of the fact that the Christ was once present in the man Jesus and passed through the mystery of Golgotha. 2,000 years of the life of Christianity has achieved nothing more than to bring home to human beings that Christ descended to the earth and has established a connection with it. Human understanding was not mature enough for more. Only now, in the fifth post-Atlantean epoch, the epoch of the evolution of the consciousness soul, has humankind become mature enough not merely to understand the fact that the Christ passed through the mystery of Golgotha, but to grasp the actual living content of this mystery. An understanding of the meaning of the mystery of Golgotha is only attainable out of the spiritual foundations humanity can acquire now for the first time in this fifth post-Atlantean epoch. A remark I have often made, both here in this group and elsewhere, is that I consider it extremely superficial to say, we live in a time of transition. All times are times of transition. The point is not that one is living in a time of change, but what it is that is changing. It is essential to see what is undergoing change. I have also referred here, from the most diverse viewpoints, to the particular changes that human consciousness and human development are undergoing, in the widest sense, in our time. Today I should like to refer from a particular angle to the changes taking place in human earthly evolution that are occurring specifically in our time. I said just now that what we are looking for, with the help of spiritual science, is not only to think thoughts about the spirit, but to reach the spirit in its reality, and to think thoughts in which the spirit itself is alive and actually comes to manifestation. We can also recall the words of Christ Jesus, "I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." You are an adherent of spiritual science in the right way if, instead of believing that the entire substance of Christianity is contained once and for all in the Gospels, you recognize that the Christ is in truth always with us, even unto the end of earth days, not present merely as a dead impulse in which one has to believe, but as a living force which will increasingly come to manifestation. And what is this manifestation in our time? It is the substance of modern anthroposophically based spiritual science. Spiritual science concerns itself not merely with talking about the Christ, but with uttering what the Christ wants to say to human beings today through the medium of human thoughts. It is like this. In olden times, also, in the days when people still lived their lives instinctively, still possessed some atavistic clairvoyance, spirit came to expression in human souls, both in their thought life and in their will. The gods did indeed dwell in humanity, and the gods do still dwell in human beings today, but in a different way from olden times. One can put it in the following way. In those ancient times, the gods had a certain task with regard to earth evolution. They had set themselves a goal, a divine goal, and this was achieved by inspiring human beings and giving them the gift of imaginations. But strange as it may seem, these primal aims of the gods are, as far as earth evolution is concerned, now fulfilled. The goal the gods set themselves for the earth was basically achieved in the course of the fourth post-Atlantean epoch. Nowadays, therefore, the spiritual beings of the higher hierarchies, whom in our sense we may also call the gods, relate differently to human souls than the way they previously related. In those times, the gods turned to human beings in order to realize their goals on earth with human help. Nowadays, human beings must turn to the gods and raise themselves up to them out of the forces of their innermost hearts. They must reach the point where their human ideals, their consciously conceived aims, can be realized with the help of divine powers. This is the right way for human beings to go about things from the age of the consciousness soul onwards. In earlier times, human goals were unconscious, instinctive, because the conscious purpose of the gods was living in human beings. Now human goals themselves must become more and more conscious. Then human ideals will have the power to rise up to the gods so that these human aims can be striven for with divine powers. Just think what these words mean. There is a great deal in them. They point to the necessity for human beings, from our particular time onwards, to begin to develop a new, vital, creative drive. We can cultivate this in various fields. Above all, we must deepen our efforts in the social sphere by looking at the relationship of one person to another in a more spiritual, scientific way. Because in earlier times, the gods realized their aims through the human race. Human beings were much closer to one another in a way that was appropriate for that stage of Earth evolution than they are today. Nowadays, people are, in a sense, being driven apart, and they must look for quite a different relationship to one another. But first of all, they have to find their way to discovering what they are looking for. This is apparent everywhere at a purely superficial level. People hardly know what it means to be human. Spiritual science, with its cosmic view of human worth and dignity, is only in its very beginnings. In real life, a person knows little about what a human being really is. As a general rule, people do not penetrate into the depths of a fellow human being's soul. In order to deepen the social structure, a new approach to knowledge of the human being must enter human evolution. As a consequence of an unspiritual, scientific outlook, we see only the human exterior. Therefore, it is essential that in order to arrive at a real, spirit-filled social organism, we must recognize that divine activity is at work in our neighbor. We shall not arrive at this realization unless we actually do something about it. One thing we can do is to strive to deepen our own soul life. There are many ways of doing this. I will mention just one, a meditative path. From various viewpoints and with various goals in mind, we can take a look back over our own life. We can ask ourselves, how has this life of mine unfolded since childhood? But we might also try it the following way. We can look not so much at what we ourselves have enjoyed and experienced, but rather at the people who have entered our lives as parents, brothers, sisters, friends, teachers, and so on. And in place of ourselves, focus our attention on the inner nature of each of these people. After a while, we shall come to realize how little we actually owe to ourselves and how much is due to all that has flowed into us from others. If we look back at the panorama of our lives in a really honest way, Our whole relationship to the world will change, and we shall have acquired the kind of feelings and perceptions that are like fertile seeds for a real experience of human nature. If a person looks again and again into his own being and recognizes the contribution which other people, perhaps long dead or who have ceased to be close to him, have made to his life, his whole involvement with other people will become such that on forming an individual relationship with someone, an imagination of the true being of this person will arise within him. This is something that at the moment of evolution we are now entering needs to become an inner, thoroughly soul-stirring social demand. It is in ways such as this that anthroposophical spiritual science must become practical, bringing lifeblood and creative energy into our social endeavors. I should like to emphasize another aspect. In earlier times, all that belonged to self-knowledge, to introspection, was a much simpler affair than it is today. For nowadays, and not only with regard to certain people's awareness of such factors as property or poverty, a social impulse of a deeply spiritual nature is arising, which manifests, for example, in the following way. At the present time, we pay scant attention to the fact that throughout life, a constant process of maturing is going on. Inwardly honest people, such as Goethe, were conscious of this process. Even towards the end of his long life, he was still eager to learn, for he knew that he had not completed the task of becoming fully human. And in looking back at his youth and his prime, he regarded all that happened at that time as a preparation for what he was able to experience in old age. People very seldom think this way nowadays, least of all when taking account of people as social beings. No sooner have we reached the age of 20 and everyone wants to belong to some corporation or other and exercise their democratic judgment, it never occurs to them that there are things in life worth waiting for, because increasing maturity comes with years. People do not think that way nowadays. This is one of the things we must learn, that at all stages of life, not only the first two or three youthful decades, all of life holds treasures in store for human beings. There is something else we must learn, too. We are aware not only of ourselves, but of people of other age groups. And in particular, we are conscious of the fact that children enter the world through birth. The consequence of human evolution is that certain things that used to unfold of themselves in human souls are now only attainable by means of extreme effort, either an effort in the direction of supersensible knowledge, or at least in the direction of a real knowledge of life. As is the case with adults in general, it is also the case with children, that parts of their own being remain closed to them. This applies not only to the experiences that will come later in life, in the years of maturity and in old age. A great deal that was formerly revealed through atavistic clairvoyance now remains closed to a person who only sees himself. If we look only within ourselves for knowledge, there are things that from the cradle to the grave can never be revealed to us. This is also a consequence of the state of consciousness belonging to our age. We can strive for clear insight, yet a great deal in this realm that ought to be illumined by this clear consciousness remains hidden. This is a special characteristic of our time. We enter the world as children, bearing a quality which is important for the world, for the social life of humankind, for the understanding of history. But we cannot reach a knowledge of this, not in childhood, nor in maturity, nor in old age, if we do not reach beyond ourselves. But it can be reached in another way. It can be reached if, either as men or women, either in the prime of life or in old age, we look at children with finely tuned spiritual perception and realize that something is revealed in children themselves, which they cannot understand at present, nor will understand throughout their whole lives if they remain dependent on themselves, but which can be understood by another person older than themselves. It is something which can be manifested through the child, not to the child itself, nor to the man or woman whom the child will become, but to another person who, at a more advanced age, looks with real love at a young child. I am drawing special attention to this because this sort of present-day feature shows you in the widest possible way that a social impulse is actively at work in our time. Is there not something profoundly social in the circumstance that something beneficial can only enter life if an older person learns from a really young person how to cooperate for the highest goals? Not merely a cooperation of one person with another, but of the old with the very young. This social cooperation is called for out of the whole spirit and essence of our time. And when there is an opportunity such as this for anthroposophical spiritual science to be brought to people who are already prepared to a certain extent through the acquaintance with its other branches, we can go even more deeply into the social problem. As people marked out by knowledge of anthroposophical spiritual science, you have ahead of you a huge task if you let all that fires you in the way of social feeling to become the means to be active among present-day humanity. Kindle a deeper social feeling, a deeper understanding between one person and another when social matters are being discussed, and you will be discharged in a truly social manner of one of the living tasks coming into being through anthroposophical spiritual science.